The Blind Californian, Quarterly Magazine of the California Council of the Blind, Spring 2015, Volume 59, Number 2. Published in Braille, large print, cassette, email, bcsubscribe@ccbnet.org, and online in readable and downloadable text and audio media. Jeff Tom, President. Address is 7414 Mooncrest Way, Sacramento, California 95831. Phone number 916-429-8201. Email is jeff.thom@ccbnet.org. Executive Office, California Council of the Blind, 1303 J Street, Suite 400, Sacramento, California 95814-2900. Phone number 800-221-6359, toll free. Other phone numbers are 916-441-2100 for voice and 916-441-2188 for fax. Email is ccotb@ccbnet.org. The website is www.ccbnet.org. San Francisco Bay Area Office, Catherine Skivers, 836 Rosota Street, Hayward, California 94545-2120. Phone number is 510-357-1986. Email is cathie.skivers@ccbnet.org. Los Angeles Area Office, Donna Pomerantz, 1115 Cordova Street, number 402, Pasadena, California 91106-3036. Phone number 626-844-4388. Email donna.pomerantz@ccbnet.org. Mitch Pomerantz, Director, Advocacy and Governmental Affairs. Toll-free number 800-221-6359. Cell phone 626-672-5150. Email governmentalaffairs@ccbnet.org. Webmaster is webmaster@ccbnet.org. Judy Wilkinson, Editor, 1550 Bancroft Avenue, number 113, San Leandro, California, 94577-5264. Phone number 510-357-1844. editor@ccbnet.org is the email. Susan Glass, Associate Editor, phone number 408-257-1034. Email is editor@ccbnet.org. The California Connection is a weekly news service provided by phone in English and Spanish at toll-free 800-221-6359, Monday through Friday after 4 p.m. and all day on weekends and holidays. By email subscription, send a blank message to connection-subscribe@ccbnet.org or on the web at www.ccbnet.org. Submissions for the California Connection can be emailed to ca.connection@ccbnet.org. Non-members are requested and members are invited to pay a yearly subscription fee of $10 toward the production of The Blind Californian. In accepting material for the Blind Californian, priority will be given to articles concerning the activities and policies of the California Council of the Blind and to the experiences and concerns of blind persons. Recommended length is under 3 pages or 1,800 words. The deadline to submit material for the summer 2015 issue of the Blind Californian is noon on May 15, 2015. Please send all address changes to Executive Office. Table of Contents. From the Editor's Desk by Susan Glass, page 5. President's Message, Fundraising, the Second Pinnacle by Jeff Tom, page 8. Ellen Murphy, Fundlens, Strong Helping Hand to Blind Women by Catherine Skivers, page 11. Governmental Affairs Report by Mitch Pomerantz, page 15. Me and the Little Six Dots by Catherine Skivers, page 19. Deep Roots and New Branches, a Profile of the ACB Capital Chapter by Susan Glass, page 23. CCB Summaries of Board Minutes, 2014 by Judy Wilkinson, Secretary, page 29. California Council of the Blind, 2014 Officers and Board, page 60. From the Editor's Desk, by Susan Glass. I've been thinking lately about the differences between belonging to an organization and belonging to a community. The very word organization sounds both sterile and methodical to me, whereas community holds so much promise. Communities of people are brought together by common interests, common problems, and common needs. If they are at all ecological, then each member of the community functions best when in concert with all other members. As Judy and I assemble this issue of the Blind Californian, its articles remind me of the ways in which CCB is a community. As you read the profile of the ACB Capital Chapter, you may notice what interests, needs, and challenges it has in common with the Orange County Chapter that we profiled in the previous BC. Both chapters have a rich history. Both are strengthened by members with good advocacy skills and good connections to their surrounding communities. Both are challenged by the need to recruit more and younger members. Both have constructive ideas about how CCB chapters can collaborate on projects and how CCB itself, as the umbrella community, can help all chapters grow. Both chapters are endeavoring to balance the needs of their individual members with the overarching needs of CCB. Both grapple with the fact that there is still so much work to be done by and on behalf of the blindness community, but all in our community are faced with limited time and resources. The good news is that we are all bound together by common interests, needs, and challenges, so our community won't be going away anytime soon. Its structure will certainly change over time to accommodate its members, but I am confident that our community will prevail. When you read Kathy Skiver's article about the Ellen Murphy Fund, you'll see how one woman combined her personal resources with CCB in order to improve the lives of blind women throughout California. This is a case of good leadership guiding a community's vision. Kathy has also shared a personal story with us about the importance of Braille in her life, as well as the prominent role played by the Missouri State School for the Blind in sculpting her character. To this day, Kathy remains in touch with the members of her school community, bonded to them by education and friendship. Even BC articles that summarize CCB convention proceedings and board meetings are crucial as they constitute archives of our community in action. We can only chart our future if we understand our past and accurately document our present. And speaking of our past, in our next issue of the BC, we plan to celebrate the lives of those CCB members who are 80 years old and counting. In other words, 80 and beyond. If you fit this category, please shout out to your editors so that we may honor you and celebrate your life and your contributions to the California Council of the Blind. Let me close on a note that I hope is both a way of thinking and a call to action. When I was a professor at West Valley Community College, I taught a number of courses with service learning components. Students worked on projects in their local communities and then incorporated that work into the writing that they were doing about activism, social structures, literacy, ecology, politics, and more. We have a slogan for those service learning courses: Serving to Learn and Learning to Serve. I think that slogan articulates our calling in CCB. We serve CCB in order to learn about it as a community, as well as in order to learn about blindness issues and about ourselves. Through our service, we learn how to serve. We learn what our skills, strengths, and talents are, and we learn how to share them with our community. That sounds like win-win growth to me. President's Message: Fundraising, the Second Pinnacle, by Jeff Tom. In the last issue of the BC, I talked about the first pinnacle underlying the continued ability of the California Council of the Blind to remain at the forefront of work for Californians who are blind or have low vision: membership. As hard as it is to grow our membership, the second pinnacle underlying our future success is an even more difficult issue for many to embrace: fundraising. Some of us are natural-born fundraisers. They seem to have the affinity for it and the skill set as well. For others, fundraising is more frightening than appearing on American Idol. However, if we are dedicated to CCB's future success, we must overcome our fears and uncertainties and forge ahead. Many of us rationalize our non-participation in fundraising efforts. Some refuse to participate because they lack the income to give to the organization. We should never judge another member by his or her decision as to whether they can afford to donate funds to the organization. However, we all have the capability of assisting in fundraising efforts in some fashion or other. Whether providing fundraising ideas, seeking donations from your contacts outside the organization, or volunteering your time at a fundraising event, there are ways for all of us to do our part. Others find fundraising somewhat repugnant, almost akin to begging. To those who feel that way, I would make two interrelated points. First, the flaw in that argument is that we are only asking for support to further our outstanding work of assisting persons with vision loss. Secondly, in our resource development efforts, it is essential that the primary message we convey concerning the need for fundraising is not one of pitying those who are blind or who have low vision, but one of achieving our mission: helping to ensure that persons with visual impairments can live independently and that we have equal opportunities in society. Another reason for an unwillingness to participate is the notion that successful resource development for CCB is just too daunting for the individual member. The error in this line of thinking is that, rather than contemplate what needs to be done as a whole, if every member set a small fundraising goal for themselves, the difference in our annual revenue would be enormous. If you want to do more, but still feel uncertain as to what you can do, I urge you to talk to me or other CCB leaders. After all, financial resources are, as they say, the big elephant in the room, and it is up to us to embrace the challenge to secure our future. Ellen Murphy Fund Lends Strong Helping Hand to Blind Women, by Catherine Skivers. I first encountered Ellen Murphy while I was serving as CCB president, and she called the council office to inquire about organizations of the blind that she might be able to assist. She said she was not in good health and thought it was time to make plans for her estate. If life circumstances were difficult for her, she speculated, they might be doubly so for blind women. I answered her questions about what services were available through various organizations of and for the blind, and at her request, sent her a copy of the BC. Shortly thereafter, I began receiving telephone calls from around the country, as apparently Ellen was at work contacting everybody. Looking through the BC, she had found names of people in California and elsewhere and talked with them. She called me back and said that she wanted to know more about what the council did, and especially what I as a woman president had to do. She couldn't believe that I was a volunteer, and that all of our members who provide so many services volunteered their time as well. The fact that the council didn't even pay my medical expenses really disturbed her. She said that in talking to people throughout the country, they had said many nice things about me, and she thought that nobody would be saying good things about her. What they might say, she thought, would not be fit for print. When Ellen died, she established a trust fund, the sole purpose of which was to help blind and visually impaired women over the age of 50 with their special needs. For the past 10 years, fund trustees Abby Vincent Christine, or Christy Crespin, and myself have spent between $20,000 and $25,000 annually to help blind women. Most applicants are seeking funds for housing. They are either trying to stay in their current homes or trying to find new places to live. We have financed such items as first and last month's rent, deposits, and moving expenses. Assistance for purchasing food is also a high priority. Apparently, when SSI payments are stopped, for whatever reason, it takes time to reestablish the payments. We trustees have not been able to figure out what people are supposed to do until the payments resume. On at least 2 occasions, we were happy to assist women who lost everything due to fires in their residences. When I say everything, I mean everything. Clothes, furniture, family heirlooms, personal documents, a place to live, everything. Through the Ellen Murphy Fund, we've also helped women meet dental and other medical expenses. One unique case involved a woman with a rare eye disease which required her to have her blood drawn twice a month and sent to a pharmaceutical company which then mixed the blood with a special medication. This mixture, now in the form of eye drops, was then returned to her by mail. Her doctors told her that if she did not use these eye drops daily, she would lose the balance of her remaining vision. Generally, the Ellen Murphy Fund assists an applicant only once, but we made an exception in this case, since this woman's need was definitely ongoing. Sadly, this woman passed away in the fall of 2014. If you or a woman you know is interested in applying to the Ellen Murphy Fund, please contact the CCB office for an application. Fill it out, return it, and it will be passed along to the 3 trustees. All of your information will be kept confidential. We have a member of CCB who is an anonymous donor to the Ellen Murphy Fund. We're so sorry that we can't say who this donor is because her or his contributions have been so needed and so appreciated. We know that people are constantly asked to contribute to many causes, and we all have our favorite projects, such as our council. Needless to say, any contributions made to the Ellen Murphy Fund will be much appreciated, and we sure will know what to do with the money. None of us knows what happens when we leave this earth. I just wish Ellen could hear the grateful thanks that she gets from all the ladies we help. Almost all of them ask who she is and say that they wish they could thank her in person. They remember her in their prayers. For sure, I hope that she can know that people do say wonderful things about her and that they can be printed or spoken anywhere. Governmental Affairs Report by Mitch Pomerantz. Preparation and surprises. Those 2 words summarize the commencement of the new year for me as chairperson of the CCB Governmental Affairs Committee. First, for the surprises. Having been essentially absent from the California legislative scene for a few years, I was surprised to read so many wholly unfamiliar names while reviewing the roster of Assembly and Senate members for this legislative session. Term limits, even with recent voter-approved tweaks, have truly meant significant turnover in the legislature. It also means that we as advocates, representing a very small minority, within the border disability community, not to mention society as a whole, must continue to educate California's 120 elected representatives nonstop. My other surprise, while glancing through the names of Assembly members, was to see the name of an old colleague of mine from my working days with the City of Los Angeles, Reginald Jones Sawyer. D-59. Reggie, we knew each other well enough for me to still call him that, as it turns out, is in his second term at the Assembly. He and I have already spoken, and I am hoping that this connection will bear fruit for our advocacy efforts during the next 2 years. Now for the preparation. In my previous column, I mentioned our 3 legislative initiatives we were working to have introduced this year. The In-Home Supportive Services, IHSS, reader bill which would add reading assistance to the required services available to blind consumers of IHSS. Amending language to the statute governing the state price schedule, which is utilized by the Department of Rehabilitation to provide assistive technology and other training services to clients, and amendments relative to the State Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind. While President Tom no longer chairs this committee, since he resides in Sacramento and I do not, he has done a good deal of the necessary legwork in an effort to obtain authors to carry our various legislative initiatives. I've done much of the phone work, making appointments for Jeff, writing follow-up emails and letters, and other ancillary activities. This past week, it is February 15 as I write this, Senator Isidore Hall, D., introduced SB-199, our IHSS reader bill. He authored the same proposal last year while a member of the Assembly. The bill already has one co-author in the Senate, Jim Beal, D-15, and 4 sponsors in the Assembly, Tom Lackey, R-36, Freddie Rodriguez, D-52, Susan Bonilla, D-14, and Marie Waldron, R-75. If you happen to reside in the district of any of the above-named legislators, a thank you call and or email would be appreciated. Clearly the bill already has bipartisan support, but we need buy-in from the Department of Social Services as well as the governor. As I indicated last time, our proposed guide dog legislation will not be introduced until 2016. Our proposal to amend the state price schedule statutory language is still being shopped to various members of the legislature. One obstacle we face is that there are limits to the number of bills a given legislator may introduce, and we're approaching the deadline for introducing new legislative proposals. I'll report on developments in future columns. This coming Friday, February 20th, Donna and I leave for the American Council of the Blind annual triple header in the Washington, D.C. area, the ACB Board of Directors meeting, the gathering of affiliate presidents, and the legislative seminar. It is this latter event for which I have also been doing some serious preparation over the past few weeks. There are 9 of us going to Capitol Hill on Tuesday, February 24th, including 2 very sharp first-timers, Tamara Kearney from the Silicon Valley and Patricia Bogard from the San Diego area. Others trekking to our nation's capital include Artis Bazin, Vincent Calderon, Charles Nabarate, Richard Ruda, and Jeff Tom. The 9 of us will be meeting with aides for the 53 California members of Congress and our 2 Senates to discuss ACB's legislative agenda for 2015. I will report on details on this effort in my next column. Me and the Little 6 Dots by Catherine Skivers. Editor's note. It tells you all you need to know about Kathy Skivers, former CCD president, that when we approached her about doing a biographical piece about her for her upcoming 90th birthday, May 2nd, she elected instead to submit a piece about the Ellen Murphy Fund. She told me the following story several months ago. I insisted at that time that we had to have that piece for the issue nearest her birthday. Thanks to Susan for her assistance. Although it's been a very long time, I still have a couple of outstanding memories from my early childhood. 2 things I always wanted were a brother or sister, and to go to school. My father came from Austria, and so I am first generation. His mother thought that people who were blind should be taken care of, and felt that I should be kept at home. My mother was very young and had almost no education. She taught me how to take care of myself, and by the time I was 5 years old, I was able to dress myself, and I tried to help with household chores. That didn't go over well. When Mom found me using a pot scratcher on a good dish that had raised flowers on it, and found me washing the rug in my room with soap and water, I was discouraged from that kind of participation. There was a long battle going on about my starting school. My mom took the position that she had taught me all she could, and that she, my grandmother and father, wouldn't always be with me, so it was essential that I learn to take care of myself. She finally went to the Missouri State School for the Blind, MSB, and told them about our situation. Someone from the state came to visit our home and told my dad that either he must enroll me in the school or the state would do it for him. All my cousins and all of my friends had pencil boxes, so I happily had someone take me to Woolworth's Five and Dime and secured a pencil box. I was delighted to be going to school. I was surprised to learn that I would live there Monday through Friday and come home only on weekends. When the day arrived, my suitcase, my pencil box, and I headed for MSB. I settled into my dormitory with other kids my age. A couple of them came to show me my way to class, and I asked them to wait till I got my pencil box. They found this quite surprising and asked what I was going to do with it. I said, "I'm going to learn to read and write. What do you think I'm going to do?" Regardless of what they said, I met my first grade teacher with pencil box in hand. She was just like those kids. She told me that I was going to learn to read and write, but in a different way. Those of you who know me can imagine what she got when I decided to explain why I had to use the same methods my cousins and friends used. I slid into my desk, and before long, she brought me a board. It had a bunch of holes in it, and they were in groups of six. The next thing that happened really amazed me. She brought me a box of nails, which she called pegs. This was the pegboard. For 2 days I sat there putting pegs into rows of six until the board was full. My objection to this finally brought results. I was given a slate and stylus. And guess what? The same six dots again, page after page of paper. I finally graduated to be able to use dot one, which I was told was A. I was totally thrilled with learning my alphabet in Braille. I marvel today at people who say that Braille is hard to learn. If a kid can sit down and learn it in a week as I did, what in the world is the big deal? Not only did I learn Braille, but I learned other things, such as learning to knit in the kindergarten class in the afternoon. I didn't need paper on which to do times tables because we memorized those. I've been fortunate to be able to do a lot of things during my life. I credit many kind of success I may have had to my mother, who knew I had to go to school and to MSB. Not only did I learn Braille, but I learned that I would have to be independent. So many opportunities were given to me at MSB that I would not have had if I had gone to a regular school. There were music lessons, music appreciation, speech classes, acting. As we grew older, we attended symphonies and plays. In my life, Braille has allowed me to read music, make grocery lists, mark canned goods, make and keep doctor's appointments for my family and myself, and, oh yes, track and pay my bills. We must all work as hard as we can to see that blind children today have a chance to learn Braille. Not only did I get to use my little six dots, but about the other thing I always wanted. The day I entered school, I got 110 brothers and sisters. Believe it or not, we've all kept in touch through all the years. Even though I moved to California, and even though many of them have passed on, the love we shared and the experiences we had will be with me as long as I live. Deep Roots and New Branches. A Profile of the ACB Capital Chapter by Susan Glass. If you look through the names of affiliates listed on CCB's webpage, you'll notice that many carry the CCB initials as part of their designation. Not so with the Sacramento affiliate. Its title is the ACB Capital Chapter. The reason for this difference is historical. The founding of the Capital Chapter predates CCB, and its name was meant to align it with the American Council of the Blind and to differentiate it from the National Federation. Being situated in California's capital city has given this particular affiliate a leg up where governmental affairs are concerned. Our annual Capital Day allows blind Californians to gather in Sacramento, where they chat with and educate state legislators on issues crucial to our community. When an issue needs immediate action, it's often the Capital Chapter members who are uniquely positioned to advocate. Such was the case a few years back, when our state talking book library funding was in jeopardy. Capital Chapter members were in immediate proximity to unfolding events and were thus able to testify. Of course, other blind Californians also helped with their phone calls, petitions, and letters. Currently, the Capital Chapter has 31 members. Paul Pache, Jr., now in his third year serving as president, cites collaborative spirit as one of the chapter's key strengths. Recently, the Chico Chapter wanted to revise its bylaws and constitution. So, at the request of the Chico Chapter, the ACB Capital Chapter shared its constitution and bylaws as models. Collaborative spirit was also evident at the 2014 Mutt Strut, as members of other Northern California CCB affiliates gathered in Sacramento to participate in its Mutt Strut event. Probably every CCB chapter faces the challenge of balancing between meeting its members' social needs and advocating for issues affecting CCB, ACB, and the blindness community at large. According to members Paul Pache, Margie Donovan, and Jeff Tom, this is a truism for the Capital Chapter. After a year and a half of work, members successfully made voting materials and processes accessible to blind people in Sacramento and the surrounding county. Margie Donovan, who is chapter vice president and advocacy chair, tirelessly worked with her constituents to bring audio description to Broadway Sacramento, one of the city's performing arts venues. Margie would like to see her chapter expand its advocacy role. People coming into our chapter have often been members of the blindness community for a long time, but not necessarily members of the CCB community, she says. Understandably, they are seeking social connections. Jeff Tom concurs, adding that people seem either to be interested in social activities or in advocacy, but generally not both. He also adds that this too is understandable, since everyone in CCB volunteers his or her time, and each of us only has so much time to devote to the organization. Another strength of the Capital Chapter is its fundraising. It sponsors bingo games that are open to the surrounding community, and the bingo has proven itself an exceptional revenue source, enabling outings to Apple Hill, Monterey, Reno, and an audio-described version of South Pacific in Sacramento. The Capital Chapter has also hosted many Northern California State CCB conventions, and this too has brought in revenue. Paul Pache, Margie Donovan, and Jeff Tom all acknowledged CCB for crucial student scholarships given to them during their formative years, and all agreed that recruiting student members and young people is a high CCB priority. They believe that students receiving CCB scholarships should be required to attend the state convention, and that at least some convention seminars and activities should be designed exclusively for students. If it were financially possible, Jeff would like to see a reception given in honor of students. Margie advocates student mentoring and cautions that we need to nurture students' growth within the organization before assigning them too many CCB leadership responsibilities that divert their attention from the needs of other students. CCB has so many projects and not enough people to complete them, so it tends to usurp the resources of any willing individual. This would seem to be true of most organizations run by volunteers. Growing CCB is on the minds of Paul, Margie, and Jeff. As a member of the CCB board, Paul Paul would like to attend the membership meetings of nearby chapters to foster connections between them and the board, and to learn what they would like and need from CCB. Margie advocates that CCB members visit Camps Bloomfield and Enchanted Hills when adult campers are present to tell them about CCB. She also suggests that prior to each state convention, CCB members in the hosting city visit the disabled services programs at local community colleges and universities to publicize the CCB convention there. "We've also got to reach out to the parents," says Margie. "Recruiting CCB members happens one child at a time, long before children are even old enough to join the organization." As you can see, the ACB Capital Chapter has deep roots of wisdom and precedent, as well as a new and vigorous branching of ideas and strength. How fortunate we in CCB are to know and work with our Capital colleagues. CCB Summaries of Board Minutes 2014 by Judy Wilkinson, Secretary. Here are minutes for six of the seven meetings of the CCB Board for 2014. Because of space considerations, the lengthy pre-convention minutes for April 10 will be included in the summer issue. In order to save space, I will list all board members here and note only those who were absent from any given meeting. President Donna Pomerantz through June 30, Jeff Tom from July 1st, First Vice President Eugene Lozano, Jr., Second Vice President Roger Peterson, Secretary Judy Wilkinson, Treasurer Peter Pardini, Immediate Past President Jeff Tom through June 30th, and Donna Pomerantz from July 1st. Directors Artis Bazin, Vincent Calderon, Lena Dawes, David Hanlon through June 30th, David Jackson through June 30th, Paul Patch, Jr. from July 1st, Linda Perrell, John Ross, Frank Welt from July 1st, Robert Wendt, and Vita Zavoli. When a reference to an appendix is made, you can request it from the office. Just let Ed know the meeting date and appendix number. Occasionally, if the information in an appendix is short, it is included in the body of the minutes. Board Meeting, February 10, 2014. President Donna Pomerantz called the meeting to order at 7:05 p.m. Board members John Ross and Robert Wendt were absent. The board entered executive session where legal issues were discussed. The board exited executive session. In that session, Gene Lozano moved and Peter Pardini seconded a motion to approve a proposed letter to California Secretary of State. Jeff Tom moved, and Peter Pardini seconded a motion to ratify the previously held email vote confirming the appointment of Margaret Garcia Buckman to the Dr. Newell Perry Trust Committee. The motion carried with one abstention. New business. Linda Perella announced that the Publications Committee is considering asking AIRS LA, the radio reading service for the Los Angeles area, to record the audio version of The Blind Californian. They had three requests. 1. We place a link from our website to theirs. 2. We give them credit for creating the recording. 3. We allow them to place a link to the recording on their site. Discussion followed, and Jean suggested that the Publications Committee bring forward a proposal to the board concerning a connection with AIRS LA. He added that we need a formal contract with them. We unanimously adjourned at 8:13 p.m. Board Meeting, April 6, 2014. President Donna Pomerantz called the meeting to order at 7:02 p.m. Absent, Directors Vincent Calderon, David Hanlon, and Robert Wendt. Approval of past minutes. Peter Pardini moved and Lena Dawes seconded the motion to approve the pro-convention board minutes for October 17, 2013. The motion passed with two abstentions. Peter moved and Lena seconded the motion to approve the conference call minutes for November 6, 2013. The motion passed with two abstentions. Linda moved and Peter seconded the motion to approve the conference call minutes for November 26, 2013. The motion passed with two abstentions. Peter moved and Jean seconded the motion to approve the conference call minutes for December 11, 2013. The motion passed with 2 abstentions. Judy asked about capturing items in the minutes flagged for further follow-up. Donna asked her to keep track of such items and forward them to the president. Vita moved and Peter seconded the motion to accept the agenda with the addition of discussion of the chapter for the Lakewood chapter. Vote unanimous. The charter will be issued at the convention banquet. John moved and Judy seconded a motion to grant the new chapter the traditional startup amount of $500. Discussion followed. Jeff asked if they will be seated with a delegate. Artis said always in good order. Jean said the president was Michelle Turnett. Peter asked about the number of members. Donna thought 11 or 12. Jean expressed concern that was so close to the minimum number 10 required to form a chapter. John asked about geographical location. No one was totally certain. Somewhere near Long Beach? Artist Donna reminded us that people chapter jump all the time. The board entered and exited executive session. Several legal matters were discussed. No actions were taken. The meeting was adjourned at 8:50 p.m. Board meeting, June 11, 2014. Absent David Hanlon, Judy Wilkinson. The meeting was called to order at 6:03 p.m. Motioned and seconded to go into executive session at 6:10 p.m. Exited at 6:26 p.m. Motioned and seconded to enter into structured negotiations regarding AMC Theaters. Motion to ratify the vote on the web project contractor. The Conference and Convention Committee will be meeting on June 26 to discuss the various sites that are being considered for the 2015 CCB Conference and Convention. They will bring forward a recommendation for a vote at the next meeting. An open board meeting will be scheduled between June 27 through 30 to discuss the suggested venues put forth by the Conference and Convention Committee, and a board vote will be taken. The announcement regarding the board meeting will be in the June 13, 2014 edition of the California Connection. The meeting was adjourned at 6:33 p.m. Respectfully submitted, Vita Zavoli, board member. Board meeting, June 29, 2014. The meeting was called to order by President Donna Pomerantz at 6:05 p.m. Absent, Directors Hanlon, Ross. Members of the public, Keith Johnson, Margie Donovan, Ken and Pam Metz, Albert Contreras, Mitch Pomerantz, Annette Carter, Mike Keithley, Phil and Debbie O'Bragan, Pam Pelagi, Steph Aminoff, Mona Craig, Jason Holloway, Frank Welch, Tuan Yen. Donna reminded us of conference call etiquette. In her opening remarks, Donna thanked everyone for being on the call and assured us this would be the first of many open board conference call meetings to come. She said the board had been wanting to do this for some time. She thanked outgoing board members David Jackson and David Hanlon. David Jackson for his support and energetic ongoing participation for the strategic plan. David Hanlon, who was dealing with health issues, for his chairing the committee concerning hearing impairment issues. She thanked everyone for all their support during her time as president. She stated she would continue working hard for the organization and the board. She will work on projects Jeff has asked her to continue with. She once again thanked the organization for her CCB Life membership. She said she would continue working together on programs moving the organization forward. In closing, she thanked Mitch for being there every day. Conference Convention Committee Report, Chair Eugene Lozano. Jean updated us on the hotel selection process for 2015 conference convention. He described the 3 bids the committee seriously considered. He reminded us that for the past 9 years or so, we've divided the state in half, north-south, roughly in the Fresno-Bakersfield area. For the past few years, we've used the services of Conference Direct to submit proposals to hotels. We've had a good working relationship with them. Because of size, they can negotiate better deals. Including recommendations from our members, they targeted 32 hotels. We got 8 responses, which the committee narrowed to 4. The board approved room costs up to $120 and a food beverage maximum of $15,000, all-inclusive. In late May, the committee decided to visit 4, The Hilton, Woodland Hills, LAX, International Crown Plaza, which we've been to before, San Diego Marriott, La Jolla, and Ontario Airport Conference Center, which pulled out just before the committee's trip. Overview of costs. LAX, Crown Plaza rate, $121. Food, beverage, $19,600. San Diego Marriott, $112 and $15,000, though our dates weren't available, so the rate would be $145. The committee recommends the Hilton Woodland Hills with a room rate of $99 and the minimum food beverage of $15,000. Dates April 16 to 19. The hotel would include a 20% discount at their restaurants and keep both open for all three meals. We would have to sign a waiver for our hospitality suite. Shuttle costs are high, but paratransit can be used from the airports. It also had the best dog relief area, though there is a challenge getting to it. Margie Donovan, GDUC's representative on the committee, supported this recommendation. Discussion. It was suggested we try negotiating for 2017 as well. Margie will bring to GDUC guidelines for use in future site considerations. Lots of questions and input. Jean reminded us of all that goes into negotiating a deal. Dates. Lower for Mother's Day. Exhibit hall considerations, restaurant options, wireless options. Some discussion of the hospitality issue. The hotel will allow us to bring in liquor. We must sign a waiver. Technically, those under 21 are not allowed. Linda Pirelli wanted the record to reflect that people under 21 would not be welcome in the hospitality suite. Vita asked for other rates, suggesting that the savings in transportation might be worth it. Jean reminded us of all the complex considerations. The other serious candidate hotel would charge $19,600 for food and beverages. Lena moved and Jeff seconded the motion to accept the committee's recommendation of the Hilton Woodland Hills Hotel and, if beneficial, to negotiate a deal for 2017. Vote unanimous. Jean thanked his selection committee, Dan Smith, CCCLV, Peter Pardini, Treasurer and Exhibit Hall Chair, Margie Donovan, GDUC, immediate past President Jeff Tom, and ex officio member Donna Donna, for all her support for the past 4 years. Vita asks that all documents relating to guide dog issues be reviewed by GDUC. Margie stated that, of course, all policy issues would be reviewed by GDUC. Donna said such issues would be only one part of what, hopefully, would become a manual to guide future selection efforts. She then thanked Jean for all his hard work and said when she started she had no idea how many little pieces affected the whole apple cart. Treasurer's Report. Peter Pardini gave a brief report. Period January 1st through May 31st, 2014. Total income, $78,722. Expenses, $85,802. Difference, minus $8,080. Other income, investments, $16,012. Difference, $7,932. CEA fund balance, $28,146. We've received the engagement letter for the 2013 audit. Fieldwork will be conducted July 28th. We'll receive a draft no later than September 2nd, 2014. The cost is $9,750, only $250 more than last year. There will be a budget finance meeting in August. Mitch commented that our investments are up $7,000 above the last reporting period. Peter thanked Donna for all her hard work and assistance. Donna said they had always had open communications. Jeff moved and many seconded acceptance of the treasurer's report. Vote unanimous. Strategic plan update. Donna Pomerantz. Donna reported we now have a draft timeline with dates and content clarifications. Artis has input this material into our strategic plan document. She shared the four main goals. Number 1. Implement resource development strategies to end the erosion of our resources. Number 2. review organizational structures and functions to implement efficiencies and enhance provision of services. Number 3, increase membership and strengthen local chapters and affiliates. Number 4, discern the implementations of going to one conference and convention and to construct strategies to address these issues. She and Jeff have heard from new board members about how they wish to serve. She and Jeff are still tightening up loose ends. Each goal area will need several additional participants. She reported that we have already completed a few items in the plan. Public comment, Mitch Pomerantz. Food for thought for the board predicated on earlier issues about hotels and hospitality. The day is fast approaching when chapters running hospitality suites will end. This is happening on the national level and will probably happen here. The board needs to deal with this. The good news, we might be in a position to strike a deal with the hotel to hire a bartender against our F&B costs. If we play it right, we might mitigate our F&B costs. Pam Balaghi, two things. Thanks to Donna for her presidency. Thanks to the board for allowing members on the calls. Donna asked for thoughts on what went well and what could be improved. We adjourned at 7:47 p.m. Board meeting, July 27, 2014. The meeting was called to order at 6:04 p.m. by President Jeff Tom. All officers and directors were present. Members of the public, Steve Aminoff, Ken Metz, Pam Palagi, Gabe Griffith, Phil and Debbie O'Brien, Annette Carter. The agenda was approved. Number 1, call to order. Number 2, roll call and introductions. Number 3, review of agenda. Number 4, approval of minutes for February 10, April 6, April 10, June 11, and June 29. Number 5, treasurer's report. Number 6, discussion of 2017 hotel bid. Number 7, website contract update. Number 8, public comment. Approval of minutes. Roger moved and Lena seconded the motion to approve minutes. The understanding is all non-substantive clarifications for all minutes will be made. The motion carried with 2 abstentions. Abstention discussion. A discussion of how to deal with abstentions followed. Jean thought it was policy to record names. Judy said that in light of a recent discussion, the result of which was that no clear policy demanded it, she decided not to record those names. Roger agreed that in voice votes, such records are not necessary. Jean asked that the auditors be asked for clarification on this matter. Gabe Griffith said that while he was secretary, in general he had noted the number but not the names. Donna supported asking the auditors. There was no motion, but all agreed. Lena moved and Linda seconded a motion to approve the minutes for April 6. Donna noted she added corrections which, in fact, had accidentally not been sent. When sent, her corrections for all minutes will be incorporated. The motion carried with 3 abstentions. Roger moved and Artis seconded a motion to approve the pre-convention board minutes of April 10, 2014. The motion passed with 2 abstentions. Lena moved and Roger seconded the motion to approve the minutes of July 11. The motion passed with 3 abstentions. Artis moved and Lena seconded a motion to approve the minutes of June 29. The motion passed with 3 abstentions. In connection with these minutes, discussion followed as to the reiteration by Bernice Kandarian on hers and Kathy Skiver's behalf that appropriate records be attached when referenced in the minutes. Discussion concerned whether to attach or paste such reports or records, whether to reference records or reports if they were already attached to earlier minutes. Donna moved and Roger seconded a motion that beginning with the minutes of February 10, 2014, all relevant reports or records will be appended, pasted to, the end of any set of minutes which reference them. Vote unanimous. Notwithstanding the motion, it was also agreed, but not in a formal motion, to ask our auditors about the necessity of this policy. Treasurer's Report. Peter's report covered the period January 1, 2014 through July 15, 2014. Income, $82,201. Expenses, $98,673. Other income, $16,012. Income less expenses, minus $460. Balance sheet total assets ending July 15, $1,065,770. Discussion. Frank asked if these reports will only include the bottom line. He would like more detail. Jeff thought it is helpful to have this update at each board meeting, even if somewhat brief. Donna reminded us that this is a new feature to have reports at every board meeting, and we need to work out how much detail would be good. Donna moved and Artis seconded the motion to accept the treasurer's report. The motion passed with one no vote. Judy asked when we could expect to receive the revised report, which the board originally received at the pre-convention board meeting. Peter said in a couple of weeks. Report of Convention Hotel Selection Committee for 2017 site. Jeff reminded us that we have agreed to a contract for 2015 with Woodland Hills and to pursue contract for 2017. Jean described the differences with the proposed 2017 contract. Donna described the visit by several members, including GDUC's Representative Margie Donovan, to the hotel in regard to the guide dog relief area issues. All members were satisfied with the solutions the group worked out. Jean reminded us that Margie, in conjunction with GDUC, will be working on user information for guide dog handlers, which should be available before arrival at the convention. Jean said the committee is asking for two motions, one to approve contract negotiations and the other to approve dates. Differences: room rate, 2015, $99, 2017, $105, food and beverage, 2015, $15,000, 2017, $16,000, F&B amount all inclusive. Jean then gave actual meal costs. The dates are set in 2015 for April 16 to 19. Two sets of dates in 2017 are Option 1, April 5 to 10, including a Monday should we choose to use it, but April 9 is Palm Sunday. Option 2, April 19 to 24, including a Monday, but that day is the final day of Passover. Jean moved and Judy seconded a motion to proceed with the contract for 2017. Discussion. Judy started that given increasing costs, this is a very good contract. Vince asked about the issues of 20% reduction on restaurant costs and the hospitality room setup. Jean explained that the 2017 contract has exactly the same provisions as the 2015 contract. Yes to 20% and no change in hospitality room issues. Jeff urged passage because they are only holding our dates until the end of July. Public comment. Gabe, these increases don't seem unreasonable. Jean said, Elaine, our negotiator, said these rates are very reasonable. The motion passed unanimously. Judy moved and Jean seconded a motion to negotiate a contract for the dates April 19 to 24. Discussion. Ken clarified the Passover date. Roger wanted to make sure that those who arrive early, Wednesday, and stay through Sunday get the same rates. Jeff said they would. Jean reiterated that if we used Monday, Monday night would not be included. Unanimous vote. Convention evaluation. Jean gave a convention evaluation update. Overwhelming approval for continuing the track sessions. We need more tracks, more participation. We need to use Thursday more efficiently. Convention 2016. Roger asked if we have any information about 2016. Jeff said those negotiations would begin as soon as we complete these 2015 and 2017 contracts. Jean said Elaine would begin putting out RFPs at the beginning of September. Peter suggested once again seeking a two-year agreement, and Jean agreed this could be possible. Donna pointed out that we're not locked into anything about the number of years. Frank brought up a proposal he has presented about having 2 consecutive years in Southern California and moving the Northern California Convention to an odd-numbered year, since that would be the first year of the legislative session when we are more likely to have an impact and time for our bills. It would also give us a chance to build attendance in Southern California, where more of our members reside. Jeff said we have time and could renew this discussion at a future board meeting. Gene reminded us that such a measure could have constitution and bylaws ramifications. We need to check relevant sections first. Donna suggested we leave this issue to the convention committee to investigate whether it is feasible to move in this direction. Jeff said he will consult with Gene and Gabe and bring a report back to the next meeting as to what would have to happen to make such a change. Website contract update. Vita gave a quick history, saying Annette Carter was hired June 2014 to change the platform of our website to Drupal. The project has started. She is 1 month into the project. She has to install modules, create settings. She has installed Drupal and our backup. By the end of August, the TOG should be able to begin testing. See Appendix 1 for the report. Public comment. Annette Carter loved the tracks and asked if it would be possible to go to all of them. The answer is no. Linda was congratulated on her daughter's film at a conference on arts in the schools, which will be presented on August 13, then YouTube. The meeting adjourned at 7:45 p.m. Board meeting September 4, 2014. President Jeff Tom called the meeting to order at 7:04 p.m. All board members were present. Introduction of the public: Steve Aminoff, Margie Donovan, Ken and Pam Metz, Ken Stewart, Pam Pelagi. Agenda. Number 1, roll call. Number 2, review of agenda. Number 3, decision about signing on to a letter from GDUC to the governor pertaining to Mr. Don Brown. Number 4, discussion of next steps regarding Resolution 2013-B6, Guide Dog Users of California. Number 5, calling out of BART train station stops. Number 6, update on strategic plan. Number 7, audit update. Number 8, public comment. Number 9, adjournment. A request to have approval of minutes and a Muttstrut update added. Judy moved and Frank seconded approval of the agenda. Motion unanimous. Artist moved and Linda seconded the motion to approve the minutes of July 29, 2014. Motion unanimous. GDUC letter to Governor Frank and Margie Donovan discussed the fact that so far as we can tell, Margie checks frequently, no progress has been made by the Secretary of State against the entity requesting incorporation under the name Guide Dog Users of California. GDUC asks the CCB to sign on to its letter to the governor. Donna moved and Robert seconded a motion to sign on to the letter. In discussion, a friendly amendment was accepted to add a sentence suggesting that we had approached the Guide Dog Board of California regarding our concern and that the board rejected our outreach. Motion unanimous. Next steps for Resolution 2013-B6. The concern was raised whether the board or convention itself should deal with what action to take against Don Brown for his efforts to incorporate an entity using GDUC's name. Gabe Griffith, chair of the Constitution and Bylaws Committee, spoke, and Frank, president of GDUC, agreed with his analysis that final authority about action against an individual member lies with the convention. A wide-ranging discussion followed. Should a committee be appointed to investigate our concern with Mr. Brown as to whether sufficient evidence to take action against him as a member of CCB? Should he be allowed to testify? Could the committee then recommend action to the convention? Frank Welty moved and Judy Wilkinson seconded. The president, in consultation with the board, would create a committee to investigate the conduct of Mr. Don Brown according to the procedures outlined in Robert's Rules of Order, which could include holding a hearing. Then the committee would return findings to the board with a recommendation regarding action to be taken at the Spring Conference Convention with reference to Resolution 2013-B6. Discussion followed. Vita, how are committees generally appointed? She suggested adding the phrase, as it relates to the incorporation of GDUC. Linda, should it be an ad hoc committee? What could we investigate that we do not already know? Peter, should the motion reference the resolution? Jeff raised a concern. What are we really going to discover? If we want to make a recommendation to the convention, we must have a hearing at the convention. Is that worth convention time? He would have no problem writing some kind of reprimand, given what we would have to do to go through hoops. Vita, I believe the reason the motion was put forward is because we don't have anything in our Constitution relating to expulsion. Roberts says we must have a committee and a hearing. Donna, about recommending to the convention, the board can recommend anything. Frank, my take on this is that while our Constitution clearly states the convention has ultimate power regarding expulsion or suspension, it doesn't say anything else about the disciplinary process, so Roberts fills in that gap. If we don't do that, anyone at the convention could move to take it up. Jeff disagrees. The convention would need its own hearing. Artis, even though Brown filed, he has not taken follow-up steps. Yes, he could follow through or relapse, but he cannot pull it back. At this point, he either must pay the fine and then make an effort to disincorporate. Jean doesn't recall the Constitution article giving grounds for an individual to be suspended. What would they use for a benchmark? He never remembers anyone being suspended. Just the impeachment of Bob Acosta. There was a hearing during the convention, no committee. Vita, this is really an action toward an affiliate discrediting GDUC. It does not affect CCB directly. The convention resolution shows the membership believes this issue is very important. Donna, what will the committee find? She agrees with Lady and fellow members. Wait until after the time is up. Margie Donovan was asked to shed some light. The year is up on September 11. There is no definite deadline as to when the Secretary of State will relinquish the name. The public. Margie encourages support. As recently as May, during GDUC candidate forum, Don lied about this. We need a report and to make a recommendation. Artis's amendment, which Paul Pache seconded, viewed as unfriendly. A committee would compile an informational report on the events regarding Resolution 2013-B6 and the actions of Don Brown and report back and make recommendations to the board. Discussion of Artis's amendment. Donna supports the spirit in which the amendment was made but would urge not to adopt the amendment. Ask GDUC to compile a report and bring it back to the board. Jean asked whether Judy and Roger's dealings with GDUC is relevant. Judy and Donna agreed the two acted as board representatives and made recommendations to the board about GDUC. Vita, we still need to speak to the Constitution Bylaws Chair. The board cannot make a recommendation to the convention. Roberts. Jeff. Frank and I differ where the hearing issue is concerned. The board can pursue this matter. Frank. My perspective. The resolution has the board working with GDUC to work through the activities regarding this matter has been successful so far. Now, with the final resolve about disciplining individuals, the proper procedure is through Roberts. A committee and a hearing is part of the disciplinary process. The entire motion should stand, not just a report. The amendment passed 8 yes, 4 no's, 2 abstentions. Jeff, yes. Jean, yes. Roger, no vote recorded. Judy, no. Peter, yes. Donna, yes. Artis, yes. Vince, no. Lena, abstain. Paul, yes. Linda, yes. John, abstain. Frank, no. Robert, yes. Vita, no. Discussion. Donna, we do not have the right to deny a hearing before the convention. There would be a hearing there. With the passage of Artis's amendment, the amendment became the motion and passed unanimously. Thus, Frank's motion was defeated. BART train stops. Jean stated that Mr. Alec Carpy, an O&M instructor with the Vista Center, requests assistance in making BART comply with calling out stops on a consistent basis. In 2010, they agreed to train operators to make three announcements: nearing the station, entering the station, when doors open. The BART administration agreed, but have reneged. The practice has not been enforced, and there are complaints. The train speakers often don't work, or the volume is too low, or they do not do all three announcements. The Vista Center wants something done. They are asking DRA to enter structured negotiations. Before making a commitment, they want to document complaints. Jean is our contact with DRA. As an organization, we've gotten complaints. We need to gather facts. We'll put something in the connection so people will call to fill out the questionnaire. Also, we have been asked to have members who frequently ride BART to work with Jeff and Jean in keeping a diary for 2 weeks. We do not need to await an official announcement from DRA. Contact directly Layla Ogabian at 510-665-8716. After they get input, DRA will be able to make a decision whether there is sufficient support to enter structured negotiations. Jean continued stating that BART plans to begin replacing trains in 2017, which will have automated technology to make such announcements, and drivers would add only if there were problems. Let Jeff know if you can keep a diary. Linda pointed out that automated systems have their own problems. San Francisco's Muni often says the system is broken. Jean agreed that there are often problems related to ambient noise. Strategic plan update. Jeff stated the goal is to talk with people so he can make appointments to the task forces. He hopes to complete this before the end of September, even if we do not have a full complement. A discussion followed as to where and how to present the goals to the membership. Linda and Judy shared the suggestion to put them in the BC, unless the board decided otherwise. Peter asked why we couldn't braille the few braille copies we might need in-house. The board agreed this would not be feasible and to go ahead and publish goals as space is available in the BC beginning with the fall issue. Audit update. Peter described the exit conference with the auditors, Vince, Donna, Peter, and Jeff. One topic was which documents could be digitalized and which must be kept in hard copy. Other issues concern formalizing things like what percent of, say, the Newell Perry Fund could be drawn upon. The auditor also wanted clarification of account procedures for the CEA and scholarship funds, restricted cash and investment accounts to be reconciled quarterly. They asked about our board decision to attach reports referred to in the minutes. The auditors felt this was good practice. Jean asked about our car donation status. Peter said we recorded gross income from car donations. We can't control how the car folks keep their books. The auditor didn't have a problem of how we deal with this. Donna added that the things Peter mentioned will improve any negative findings. Each year, we're doing better. Vita raised the issue of a group ID for 501c3 status. We need a group ID for chapters, so chapters won't use CCB's ID. Jeff said the board may want to make a decision on this matter. He stated that if a chapter wants its own ID, it needs corporate status. He said we could have a group ID without the liability as we currently do. Judy asked if we could still ask the auditors about the voice vote issue. Do we need to identify no's and abstains? She also asked about the revised treasurer's report and budget, which the board requested at the spring convention. Peter said we would definitely have those soon. Judy moved and Artis seconded the motion to accept the report. Vote unanimous. Mudstrut update. Sacramento has 46 registered and LA 35. Total revenue, Sacramento $7,560, LA First Giving $8,355. Donna gave more complete information about numbers of teams and total numbers of fundraisers and service clubs and other volunteers. Public comment. Pam Balaghi asked about whether we could have an agreement for a shopping cart with Albertsons. Jeff said Pam should keep reminding us to look into that. Robert said that another board he was on had agreement with Vaughn's, Albertsons, and Ralph's. So we should be able to do this. We adjourned at 9:04 p.m. California Council of the Blind, 2014 Officers and Board. Editor's Note. We are indebted to Bernice Kandarian, who updates and corrects the list of CCB officers and board members, including the number of the term each is presently serving, the year elected to that term, and the year next up for election. Terms begin on July 1st following election. The presence of an asterisk means that the individual served a partial term before the first full term. President Jeff Tom, Sacramento, 14 to 16 first term. Phone number 916-995-3967, cell phone. Email jeff.tom@ccbnet.org. First Vice President Eugene Lozano, Jr., Sacramento, asterisk 14 to 16 fourth term. Email eugene.lozano@ccbnet.org. Second Vice President Roger Peterson, Mountain View, asterisk 13 to 15 second term. Phone number 650-969-1688, home phone. Email roger.peterson@ccbnet.org. Secretary Judy Wilkinson, San Leandro, 13 to 15 first term. Phone number 510-388-5079, cell phone. Email judy.wilkinson@ccbnet.org. Treasurer Peter Pardini, Mill Valley, 14 to 16 third term. Phone number 415-990-9202, cell phone. Email peter.pardini, that's peter.pardini@ccbnet.org. Immediate past president Donna Pomerantz, Pasadena, 14-2? Phone number 626-844-4388, home phone. Email donna.pomerantz@ccbnet.org. Board of Directors. Artis Bazin, Burbank, asterisk 13 to 15 second term. Email is ardis.bazyn@ccbnet.org. Vincent Calderon, Montclair, asterisk 14 to 16 fourth term. Phone number 626-429-4539, cell phone. Email vince.calderon@ccbnet.org. Lena Dawes, Sacramento, asterisk 14 to 16 third term. Phone number 916-905-9034, cell phone. Email is leena.dawes@ccbnet.org. Paul Peche, Jr., Sacramento, 14 to 16 first term. Phone number 916-662-0861, cell phone. Email paul.pateche@ccbnet.org. Linda Pirelli, San Francisco, 13 to 15 third term. Phone number 415-577-8437, cell phone. Email is linda.porelle@ccbnet.org. John Ross, Bakersfield, 13 to 15 first term. Phone number 661-619 5863, cell phone. Email is john.ross@ccbnet.org. Frank Welty, San Leandro, 14 to 16 first term. Phone number 510-541-1442, cell phone. Email frank.welte@ccbnet.org. Robert Wendt, Long Beach, 13 to 15 second term. Phone number 562-438-7100, home phone. Email robert.wendt@ccbnet.org. Vita Zavoli, San Leandro, 13 to 15 first term. Email vita.zavoli@ccbnet.org. Publications Committee, Linda Pirelli, Chair, San Francisco, California, 94112. Phone number 415-577-8437, cell phone. Email is linda@porelle@ccbnet.org. Judy Wilkinson, Editor. Susan Glass, Associate Editor. Annette Carter, Roger Peterson, Donna Sanchez, Mike Keithley, Bonnie Rennie, Dr. Catherine Schmidt Whitaker. If you or a friend would like to remember the California Council of the Blind in your will, you can do so by employing the following language. In quotations, I give, devise, and bequeath unto the California Council of the Blind, a nonprofit charitable organization in California, the sum of $_ in parenthesis or underscore, to be used for its worthy purposes on behalf of blind persons. End of quote. If your wishes are more complex, you may have your attorney communicate with the executive office for other suggested forms. Thank you.